Today on Straight Talk Africa, a conversation with the former Malawian President Joyce Banda. We'll discuss the challenges and opportunities facing women in public office in Africa and around the world, and the significance of the Joyce Banda Foundation International. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. I'm Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a conversation with the former Malawian President Joyce Banda.
Well, we have so much to say and so much to cover in this hour. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topic. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
Joyce Banda is Malawi's first female president and Africa's second. We have two reports. First, my colleague Paul Sisko has more.
Most of our countries.
Joyce Banda, Malawi's first and only female president, served from 2012 to 2014.
There's no room for revenge.
Vice President Banda assumed the presidency when President Bingu wa Mutharika died in office in 2012. 2 years later, she was defeated at the polls in disputed elections by Mutharika's brother. Peter Mutharika was sworn into office on May 31st, 2014.
I, Professor Peter Mutharika.
While president, Banda successfully improved maternal and child and reproductive health in her country. Under her administration, maternal mortalities were reduced significantly. And she continues to champion human rights causes through the Joyce Banda Foundation International. The foundation has benefited over 1 million Malawians through programs supporting economic empowerment, food security, the rights and needs of the disabled, water and sanitation, education, and more. But in June 2012, Joyce Banda sold the presidential jet to reduce government spending. In 2013, Banda sacked her cabinet following revelations of the Capitol Hill Cashgate scandal. Former President Banda has not been in Malawi since the presidential transition. Under President Mutharika, Malawi continues to be one of the poorest and least developed countries in Africa and on Earth. And former President Joyce Banda continues to be a tireless advocate for women and girls, their emancipation and empowerment, and a world-recognized civil rights campaigner. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
VOA's Hyde Adams Fitzpatrick spoke with Banda just before the U.S. elections at the Center for Global Development, where the former president is doing research on women's political leadership and girls' education.
Most of our countries on the continent of Africa don't have the capacity to achieve equality between our boys and girls and our men and women. But the second most important thing that is coming out within my research are the traditions and culture, the harmful traditions and culture that look normal at household level, but that are affecting our girls and their progress and their attainment of education. My research is looking at the household. How is this girl child being treated? By the time she goes to school, as far as I'm concerned, she has already lost out. She has already been disadvantaged. You are a fellow African just like me. Why is it that African women grow food, harvest, store, process, cook, and then men must eat first, best and most, while women eat last and less? Why? We need to get as many women as possible into positions of leadership. Not only are they role models, but they focus more on issues of women and children.
Is there anything you wish you had done that you weren't able to do, didn't have time to do?
Before I appointed my cabinet, I set up what I called the Presidential Initiative on Maternal Health. In 2 years, we were able to reduce maternal death from 675 per 100,000 live births to 460. The African Union gave us an award for that work. For the first time, the Solicitor General of Malawi was a woman. Two governors of the Reserve Bank, Deputy Commissioner of the Inspector General of Police, 8 district commissioners, 100 appointments. So I have no regrets. That's what I'm trying to say, that I did my part. Because you can only provide the tools to protect the women. The rest is up to them.
Do you see a rise in the number of women presidents in future on the continent, or do you see that number dialing back or staying the same?
The number of women presidents shall rise, not only in Africa but globally. The challenge is not to get women to go to State House. The challenge is to support women get into State House, become presidents, but stay there. That's the challenge. So what you find on the continent of Africa, South Africa alone, Malawi, everywhere, are capable women that have the capacity to take any position in government, including State House. And they're just sitting there, they're not being given the opportunity.
Why?
Women's leadership is under attack. That's all I can say. Look at what happened to Julia Gillard, Thailand, Philippines. Look at what happened in Myanmar. Where do you stay under house arrest, run for election, your party wins and you're not president? Look at what happened in Zimbabwe to a vice president who everybody thought was going to take over. Now she's being accused of being a witch. So go all the way to Argentina, Brazil, Chile, and maybe end up here. So I have hope that women shall be elected to the positions. But perhaps what you and I should discuss next time is what can we do to make sure that when our fellow women get into leadership, into State House, they stay.
Thank you very much, Heidi and Paul. Joining us here in our Washington studios is our distinguished guest, President Joyce Banda, a former Malawian head of state. She is currently serving as a distinguished fellow at the Center for Global Development and Woodrow Wilson Center here in Washington, D.C. Madam President, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we will give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Well, like I said, of course, it's really a great pleasure to have you in the Washington studios, because we've been trying to access you for a very, very long time without success.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks to River, and of course, thanks to you finally deciding to come here. What exactly are you doing here in the nation's capital?
I am currently doing research. I'm a distinguished fellow, visiting fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center. It's a joint fellowship that was put together by the Center for Global Development and the Woodrow Wilson Center to provide me an opportunity to do research. I have always wanted to do this into women's leadership at the Woodrow Wilson Center and girls' education at the Center for Global Development. I'm looking into the particular age group of 0 to 10. There has been so much done, and I must commend all the fighters for girls' rights, UNICEF and other institutions that strive to provide opportunity for girls to go to school, particularly the adolescent girls. Here in the United States, the Obama administration put together resources to look to support women, adolescent girls, for education, health, economic empowerment, and armed food traditions. But the case I'm trying to make in my research is that yes, that is the supply side is fine. Mm-hmm. That a lot of money is being put together for girls' education, uniforms, school feeding programs, toilets at the schools. The girl must be protected. School fees must be provided. That is the supply side. For me, what I'm focusing on is the demand side. I'm looking at age 0 to 9. I am asking the question, what is going on at household level. And I'm looking at a typical African household, the very, very lowest segment, where a girl child must also come out of that place, get education, and end up like me. What is going on at household level? And I am saying that if a girl child and a boy child is not are not being treated equally, then that affects even nutrition. So the girl child is eating less. Number two, at the household level, the girl child, some of them end up with deformities. I'm one of those victims because we start to carry, you showed on the clip, girls that start working, carrying heavy stuff very, very early, age 5. You have a baby at the back and a bucket at the head. You, obviously, with your bones that are not mature, you are bound to end up with deformities. Number three, at household level, when resources are low, the boys go to school, the girls don't go. All that is happening between 0 and 10 years old. The third one is the defilement. Now, witch doctors are telling our men, grown men, that if they want to be cleansed of the HIV/AIDS, they have to go with a child, a toddler. So,
really?
So still, the children between ages of 0 and 9 are the ones that are falling victim. And the last one is harmful traditions. Harmful traditions, most tribes, you find that initiation ceremonies take place within that period. And you find that girls end up in other traditions facing the knife, what they call genital mutilation, between the ages of 0 to 9. In other traditions, it is the hyenas that you've been hearing about on BBC and other places. All that happens within the 10 years. My argument, therefore, is that when this child, girl child goes to school, at 10 years old now, she's an adolescent. As far as I'm concerned, she has already been traumatized. She has already been affected. So how does that affect her education? That is the first research. Now, at Woodrow Wilson Center, I'm looking at women's leadership. I'm raising the controversial issue to say that leadership, one, it's a love affair. Mm-hmm. You fall in love with the people, and the people must fall in love with you. But I'm also raising the issue that leaders are born. And leaders that are born, as far as I'm concerned, they are servant leaders.
They cannot be created?
When they grow up. Yes. No. Now, that's leadership. We must build a critical mass of women leaders on the continent to support issues of women and children. But what I am saying is that for us to do that, we must create an environment. I'm saying leaders are born. But when you look at research, it is saying those that are born with traits of leadership, it's only 30%. My argument as a woman leader is how can we capture that 30%? In a child in your house, at household level, build her up, support her up, motivate her up, encourage her so that she is interested to go to school. The household too is motivated to send this girl child to school, end up going to parliament, end up in state house as a woman leader. So that's what I'm doing. Apart from that, I'm an international speaker. And so I go all over the world. Last week I was in Europe and at Coventry University.
How do you respond to some critics, President Banda, that the girl child is better off today than she was, for example, during your time when you were a girl on the continent?
No, that is true. That is true. We must. That's why I was saying we must commend people who have made efforts to improve the status of the girl child, the woman and the girl child. In fact, in some countries, they've even closed the gap. The number of girls and boys going to school is the same. But at this same time, 60 million children around the globe are not going to school. So what we can do as women leaders is not to look the other way because we have made this improvement, mm-hmm. because we've done better, we've done well. Is to still continue to look for those that are still vulnerable, those that are still in poverty-stricken. In countries where 85% of people are rural-based, then you must understand that there will be people at the very, very grassroots level living in poverty with no opportunities that will want our support.
How do you respond to some other critics who also say that in order for the girl child or for women, in fact, to make it better on this planet, that what is really needed are fundamental changes in both men's and women's attitudes and mindsets.
That's true. That is true. You are very right. What is necessary, as far as I'm concerned, is change of mindset, behavior change. When we do this research, like the one that I've done for girls' education, first recommendation that I'm making is that we must ensure that women are protected. Number two, they are given equal opportunity. But number three, it's behavior change and mindset change and the socialization of the girl child. And for your information, Eshaka, women are sometimes the perpetrators. Mm-hmm. As mothers, we are the ones who encourage the boy child to behave differently than the girl child. It is the mindset, the change of mindset, even on the part of the women. The whole family must go through this change of mindset. At our level, we have formed, there's an organization that has been established called Think Equal. And Think Equal is advocating for the introduction of rights education from age 3. And for your information, the good news is that 117 schools around the globe in 18 countries mm-hmm. has signed up to start rights education from January 2017.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. When the producer says you go, you have to go. There's no democracy in Studio 52. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Malawi Politics. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
What matters most to me is the lives of those that I serve. My role models are Nelson Mandela, and the other one is Jimmy Carter. Nelson Mandela went to jail, stayed 27 years. He made sacrifices. He went to Robben Island. And I, by the way, I have been to Robben Island. He lost his mother. He didn't attend the funeral. He didn't bring up his children. He came back. And there's one quote that I love most. He said, "When I walked from there to freedom, I decided that I shall not be bitter, because if I am bitter, I shall continue to be a prisoner." That ability to forgive all that makes him my hero. So Jimmy Carter, what I've learned from him is that you leave State House just 1 year, and people say he was not such a good president. But what he has done post-State House is what I admire most. For me, he's a servant leader. It didn't matter where he's sitting, he brought about change. Right now, last week, he was on TV still building houses for the poor. That's my hero.
Very interesting. Talking about heroes, really, how can you possibly put your fingers on two great men? You're talking about the Madiba. Nelson Mandela, certainly a great man, and Jimmy Carter. Yes. Are you telling me, frankly, that there are no female, there are no women leaders out there, including your own mother, who gave you their shoulders to climb on so that you could see a little bit further?
No, I have plenty of heroes. In fact, most of my writings, if you see, my hero, first and foremost, is my grandmother. It is the context under which we were discussing that. We were looking at past leaders that I look upon and admire. And I've looked at Jimmy Carter, and I have said, well, he went into State House for one term. And people have said, you know, in fact, he wasn't a very good president. That's why he was not reelected. But I don't know anybody post-State House who has done as much as he has done. For me, that's a leader, servant leader. Nelson Mandela was head of the youth in South Africa. At the time when he said he was prepared to die for his nation, even if the apartheid government had given them the government, he was not going to be the president. What is it that drives a person to give up so much for the sake of others, for the sake of his people? That's a hero. But for me to be what I am, it was my grandmother. But one person that has stood by me through thick and thin is Ellen Sirleaf. So in this hour, I can start to talk to tell you about my heroes and all they have done, and there will be plenty. But in that context, I was talking about those two regarding leadership.
Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, of course, president of Liberia.
Yes.
And the first one at that, yes. Of course, in fact, the first democratically elected female president
yes.
on the continent.
And that we must never forget. The history must always be correct. Nobody must try to tamper with it.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen Sirleaf was the first democratically elected president. Because I say this, because on the continent of Africa, even before her, there were others who acted.
Mm.
Yeah, so mm. others who were transitional leaders. But I'm talking about a president elected. Ellen Sirleaf was the first female. And I thank God, because she has really stood by me and helped me.
Very interesting. You mentioned a very interesting concept here, which is servant leadership. And there are so many African presidents, for example, and leaders in other capacities who often talk about servant leadership. Is there someone that you could put your fingers on as far as the continent is concerned, who you can identify or who can in fact legitimately be identified in your view as a servant leader?
Apart from President Nelson Mandela,
correct.
I think the other person that also strikes me as a servant leader is, there are plenty. But I also look upon Sasere Sekama
yes.
as a servant leader. I look upon Mwalimu Nyerere as a servant leader. And I talk about Sasere Sekama because I hope you know that he was born to be a chief.
Of course, to be king.
And he was king at 4 years old because his father died. But his uncle took over to stand in his place until he's old enough. He went off to UK to study. When he gets there, he marries a white woman. His uncle, acting in his place, was against that. The apartheid government were against that. Everybody then said, then you will not become king. He didn't fight. He came back. He started now a party. He went on to become president. But I hope you can see that he left behind, because I am informed that the diamonds in Botswana were discovered during his time.
Correct.
He could have been greedy. He could have abused those. He could have misused those. But he went on and set up systems that have protected that wealth up to now. Secondly, he's the one who was instrumental in starting the SADC, as we know it. And thirdly, he left a peaceful transitional system that has seen the test of time up to now. It's one country that, we all admire on the continent. But I'm told lately that his son, now who is president, has been voted the best president in the world.
Ian Khama.
Yes.
In fact, so, the last time I interviewed him in Havarone, he suggested that I should, in fact, address him as Serese Khama. Ian Khama. President of Botswana. Of course, his father was a great founding president of Botswana.
Yeah.
Very interesting. He, of course, attended the school at Fort Hare in the 1940s, one of the few, actually, universities that could award degrees to an African. Mm. Very interesting. Yeah. Someone else? People like Kwame Nkrumah, perhaps?
Yes.
Sekou Toure?
Kwame Nkrumah, and I even appreciate him more now because lately I was guest speaker at the memorial of President Arthur Mills in Cape Coast.
Okay,
I went to give a lecture at that university at his memorial, and I stayed in a hotel where they left a lot of literature on President Kwame Nkrumah and all that led to his departure and comeback. To an extent that I was so taken up and inspired that 2 days later I went to his grave and laid a wreath.
You have been there?
Yes, I'm talking
about the
mausoleum in Accra. Yeah. So in my mind, growing up, I was 8 years old when Ghana became independent. 1957. That whole group, Kenyatta, Kwame Nkrumah, Dr. Kamuzu Banda, Mwalimu, all those should be our heroes. Because, I say this, because at that time, it was not easy to challenge the colonialists. But this group decided enough was enough. They were going to bring about change. And most of them ended up in jail. And for me, those sacrifices must never be taken for granted.
You might have heard, of course, Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe of Nigeria was one of those groups, the people that began, in fact, what you call Pan-Africanism.
Pan-Africanism, yes.
Very
yes,
interesting. I've had the privilege, of course, of going to Nkrofu, the birthplace of the Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, with his daughter Samia, who drove from Accra to Nkrofu, and it's incredible. When you look at the conditions where the man came from, and at the end of the day, the man was not really patriotic to his stomach, as some people would say, not greedy, but instead he was a visionary leader, a man who regains independence for his country on March 6, 1957, and actually says the independence of Ghana would be meaningless unless it was linked with the total liberation of Africa.
Yeah.
And not only did he talk the talk, but he walked the talk by providing the tools that helped his brothers and sisters to liberate themselves.
And that is servant leadership.
What happened to Africa?
Yeah.
Are there other people like that today?
Yes, of course. There are some that are there today. Yes.
Can you name names?
No, I don't want to name names. It's not good. It's not good to name names, but if you look at Africa, you can see that there is an increasingly, more especially now, a good crop of African leaders that are really champions, servant leaders, ethical leaders. Yeah, look around.
Look around indeed. Very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, but first, here is Mariama Diaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizir Yuwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. We continue our discussion with one of the most powerful women in the world, activist, entrepreneur, parliamentarian, and so much more, the former president of Malawi, Joyce Banda. on the challenges and opportunities facing women seeking public and elected office. We're also talking about what some African countries that haven't been able to have peaceful transfers of power, what they can learn from a country like the U.S., and also other African nations which have been successful in doing that. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, asking, what do you think is needed to have a peaceful transition of power in Africa? Well, starting off the conversation is a listener from Uganda with our letter of the week.
Emma Odeke from Soroti in Uganda writes, "We can have peaceful transition of power if our leaders stop considering leadership as a source of wealth and tool to protect them and their possessions."
Well, that was Emma Odeke in Uganda. And before we move on to more of your comments, let me first thank you for using all our social media platform to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Malawi Politics. And if you haven't yet, do follow us on Twitter. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Harry Florian, who writes that Africa needs strong institutions for peaceful power transition, and also media freedom is a must thing. Well, Harry is, of course, echoing a U.S. president once said, and whether you agree with him or not, that U.S. President is, of course, Barack Obama, when he uttered that Africa didn't need strong men, but instead needed strong institutions. Well, let's move on to another tweet from Quickie Riza Habert, who tweets this message, that Africa should fight corruption and bribery, hence voting for a reason, not for a choice. Well, now to a comment to a Facebook post from Sabas Chitambo from Zambia, who writes, "Voter education and knowledge of what is good for the country, the culture of humanism, must be brought back into our curriculums. We must have love for our countries and humanity at the core of our existence. The majority of us Africans don't even know what our constitutions state. The people who cling to power take advantage of the ignorance of the people they lead." Well, these are a lot of very strong arguments, Madam President. And Shaka, your thoughts on these comments.
Your reaction, President Banda.
Yeah, it is true. I think there's a few countries on the continent of Africa that have enjoyed peaceful transitions. And then it's not surprising to see that such countries are the ones that are doing well. Look at Tanzania. Look at Botswana.
Botswana, you were talking
yes,
about.
Yeah. So you find that it's automatic. Everybody understands I am here for this period. After this time, then I'll go.
In fact, Botswana is particularly unique because the last two presidents, for example, I'm talking about Festus Mogae
yeah,
and Sake Tumile Masire before him, each of them left office even before the end
yeah,
of their tenure.
Exactly.
To allow
yeah,
the next person to come
to
in
come
and take
in,
off running.
Yeah. And in fact, where at the Woodrow Wilson Center, where I am researching, President Mogae came and stayed after he left office, and he enjoys a great respect there.
Of course, he's a Mo Ibrahim
recipient. Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Mariama, do you have more reaction from the social media world?
Yes, absolutely. We'll go to a comment from Chrisid in South Africa, who writes another point that Europeans must stop interfering on African affairs. Let's look at another comment from Joel Gualupia of Uganda, who disagrees and writes that we need more Western intervention so America can come and arrest whoever has stayed in power for too long and make a law to curb such scenarios. It's become a culture in Africa for presidents to overstay in power. Well, once again, very interesting remarks on Western intervention in general. Madam President, your thoughts?
What about that?
Yeah, sometimes when I hear that people are fighting because they don't want to leave office, I ask my husband, are they in the same job that I was? Because I truly believe that there must be a reason why we have term limits. I think as a leader, you can come in and for a certain time, you can have your ideas, fresh ideas, implement them, and then make room for other fresh ideas to come on. Yes.
But what about some people who might say, wait a minute, Madam President. You have, for example, a very interesting example of Singapore, where you had this gentleman called Lee Kuan Yew, who was prime minister because they have a parliamentary democracy. And it is a party that wins the election or a coalition of parties that chooses a prime minister. This man was a prime minister for 31 years. But guess what? He developed his country from third world to the first world. What about that?
Yeah, but so has Botswana. Botswana has also developed within the term limits and peaceful transitions. And so has the Tanzania. Where that has developed within a system where they hand over power to somebody else. You know, leadership is being redefined. And what I mean is that now people are holding their leaders more accountable. If you're talking about people who could rule then for 30 years and look down upon people and press them down and they don't ask questions, that time, my brother, is gone.
But
completely.
How can you say it is gone when the last time I checked, for example, the president of Equatorial Guinea, Teodoro Obiang, the last time I checked, he came to power in 1979.
Yeah.
So is José dos Santos of Angola. So is, in fact, the president of Zimbabwe, Robert Gabriel Mugabe, the president of Cameroon, Paul Biya. When you look at the president of Congo Brazzaville, he has been in power off and on for more than 32 years. You go to my own country, Uganda, the president there has been in charge for almost 31. And when he came to power back in 1986, in fact, he was so contemptuous of this type of African leaders who the Nigerians call sit tight, the people that stay in power for more than 10 years. But guess what? The last time I checked, these people are still in power.
Yes, but that's not up to me to say whether they should go or not. I'm telling you, you asked about my opinion.
Correct.
I was just giving you my opinion to say that for me, when you come in and time to go comes, you need to go.
But you said that the time for those times for the Mobutus, for example.
No. I'm saying the times when people could just accept that and not ask questions, that time is gone.
Okay.
Leadership is being redefined in the sense that when you do that at the risk of having other people that will rise and comment and talk and protest on the street and burn parliaments, because now they are holding their leaders accountable, they're expecting transparency from their leaders and good governance. If they are satisfied, or if the powers, the leaders as maybe, are more powerful, they'll press them down and silence them. But you see what happened in Burkina Faso. When people decide that, enough is enough, they will rise.
People voted with their feet.
People.
Against Blaise Compaoré.
Yeah. So, for me, I believe in term limits, and I hope that I am entitled to my opinion.
So what advice would you have, for example, for those individuals who look at themselves as God's gifts to their own countries?
No, I would have no advice for
Why?
Them. No, because when you also listen to their arguments, they can even convince you. They're more convincing because the people will say, we don't want our leader to go because we want this situation to continue. Saw that in Rwanda.
But how can you be so sure, in fact, that that was a legitimate process?
No. I have no right to judge. But I am saying there are situations where the leader will not want to go. There are situations where the people will insist you can't go because we are scared of anything else that might come. But there are also situations where the person will respect their term and leave.
You come from Malawi. You had a founding president who was called, of course, the Yamuyaya, the Nguwazi.
Yeah,
Wamuyaya, the Nguwazi. You're talking about Dr. Hastings Kamuzu Banda.
Yes.
At one time, he declared himself a life president.
Yes.
But how come he didn't end up being a life president? They conducted a referendum that was free and fair, and you had an election that brought on, you know, brought on board
but that's
a man
exactly,
called Bakili Muluzi.
That's what exactly what I'm saying. That's what I mean by redefined leadership. It was not him who willingly brought about that referendum.
The forces.
It was the Bakili Muluzis and everybody else that said, no, we want change. And he said, I don't believe you because people love me. Then let's ask the people to say what they want. And the people said, no, we don't want one-party state. We want multi-partism.
But he could have predetermined the result, just like a lot of other people do on the continent. In any case,
Yeah. Thanks,
Mariama, for bringing us this week's reaction.
Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Another reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at President Barack Obama's legacy in Africa and the U.S. Join guest host Esther Gidui Ewart and her panel of guests as they take a close look at President Obama's legacy in Africa and the United States right here on Straight Talk Africa.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
With President Joyce Banda, a former Malawian head of state. She is currently serving as a distinguished fellow at the Center for Global Development and the Woodrow Wilson Center here in Washington, D.C. Madam President, again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Let's talk about leadership here. You've been president. You've been there, done it, someone would say. You've been a foreign minister, you were vice president for about 7 years, and you reached the political helm of your country. What is it like, frankly, if you were to talk to a very ordinary person, what is it like to be a president, for that matter? And what about, in fact, being a first female president in your own country?
I think I'm different from other leaders. I'm different in the sense that I'm talking about the presidency. I'm different in the sense that I didn't plan to become a president. I wasn't a president. I didn't prepare my mind that tomorrow I'm going to be president.
You did not apply for the job.
I was vice president today. I went to bed. The next day, the president passed away.
But that means you are a heartbeat away from the presidency.
Yeah, you are a heartbeat away from the presidency. But when it actually happens, it's like somebody has taken a big rock and placed it on your head.
Really?
Suddenly you wake up and it's the whole nation on your hands. In my particular case, I hope you know what I went through for the 3 years.
But what was your immediate reaction, really, as a human being?
No,
and as a vice president ready to jump in?
No, that's what I was going to give you, the background, mm-hmm. that for three right. years I was sidelined.
Right.
In that 3 years, you know that on the 11th of, on the 19th of October 2010, mm-hmm. There was an assassination attempt on my life. I was completely sidelined.
By
so
who?
I wasn't.
By who?
How can you know who wants to kill you?
You were part of the government.
Yeah, I was the vice president, but who was not being active? That who was not even being invited to for cabinet or anything.
And they sacked you from the ruling party.
And they sacked me for the ruling party. So I am there, and then there were two cases in court against me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether I'm going to be my position is going to be nullified or not.
What were those cases about?
To nullify my position.
Why?
Because she's no longer in our party. Yeah. She can no longer be vice president.
But we are covered by the constitution.
That's the argument. That was going to be the argument if we had ended up in court. I was going to say, but I'm covered by the constitution. But anyway, so when all this is happening, I'm vice president. And so the day comes, mm-hmm. when it's Good Friday, the president passes away. And for 2 days, I don't know that he has passed away. I'm being told that he's sick.
Why?
Because the system did not want me to know.
But from what I heard, they actually flew a dead body to South Africa.
Yes. So at that time, me too, I thought he's sick because it was not a... When he was taken to South Africa, we were told he's sick. So they are taking a sick president to South Africa. And I'm sitting there thinking he's in South Africa, in hospital. I even made an announcement in Malawi to say, stay calm. Our president is in hospital. He's receiving treatment, but you're in capable hands. So to cut a long story short, then it took 72 hours, 3 days, for people to... get to a point where they can accept that I can take oath, where I can be allowed to take. So he passed on Friday, and I think I took oath on the Sunday evening. Anyway, so I get into office. Then I find that there's no fuel for a day in the country. Even fuel for me to go and attend the funeral was donated by President Sata of Zambia. So there's no fuel. There's no money for import cover to manufacturers. Goods. The economy is in tatters. Our relationship with our neighbors is broken down. Our relationship with Britain, ambassadorial, has been suspended. The ambassadors have been switched back. We have no food for 2 million people. So that's when I come in. The economy has just grown by 1.8%. So to come back to your question, what was it like? That's what I faced. That's what I carried on my head. So for me, it is, because I'm a believer, I went down on my knees and asked God to say, leaders, as far as I'm concerned, are anointed by God. And Solomon went to God to ask for wisdom. Because I want you, Mr. Shaki, to know this. Leadership is about wisdom. You can have all the degrees in the world, but if you have no wisdom, you can't run that country.
You can't run
and
the country.
And wisdom doesn't come from anybody else but up there.
Interesting.
So I got mine from up there. And we were able to turn around that situation I've been just described in 6 months.
Unfortunately, the time happens not to be our best ally. I'm told to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome. Straight Talk Africa. Patrick, are you there? I'm afraid Patrick is not there. What about Tafa from Ghana? I'm afraid Tafa is not responding. Good evening, Samuel. Are you there? I'm afraid we're having some technical difficulties here. Talk to us about, for example, what you would consider to be the single most important decision that you made during your presidency?
When I came in and found this state of affairs, this state of the economy, I made a trip to come here, to come and meet Christine Lagarde, to sit down with me and take me step by step. Why were we off course? Because we were off course with IMF.
Christine Lagarde, the director of IMF.
IMF, the mm-hmm. chief executive. So I came here to meet her, and she told me, One thing that needed to happen in Malawi that my predecessors had not been willing to do was to devalue the currency by 49%. What that does is that it brings about hardships to the poor. And so you must ensure that the people that are going to be disadvantaged, who in my country are the majority, must move with you, must understand and must accept that you have to make this. So this is an unpopular decision. So one most important decision that I made was that I'm going to go back to my people and I'm going to do all it takes, all they are requesting us to do, in order to make sure that our country moves forward. I went back home and I learned one big lesson, is that when people, when you engage the people, when you talk to them, when you tell them the truth, they will stand with you and by you. And that's what Malawians did. I told them in very simple terms, we shall have to pass through this difficult time in order to get to a better place. Because I told Malawians to say, it's like you take your child to the hospital, they will tell you, we need to inject this child for him to feel better. But 5 days down the line, the child shall be okay. So let us pass through this difficult place. And I'm grateful to God.
And it worked.
That it worked. And I also, in the same vein, I invited all stakeholders to a round table and called it the National Dialogue on the Economy to discuss the economy. And I picked 5 sectors: infrastructure, energy, mining, tourism, and agriculture. And told them, in the time I have available as head of state, these are the 5 sectors. And by the end of my term, there will be 3 projects in these 5 sectors each. So you give people hope, but you also give them something to look forward to.
What about the single most regrettable decision during your presidency?
I don't know. There are several decisions that were difficult.
I do not need a catalog. I just need one, please.
One difficult decision?
Yes, please. That you regret.
That I regret?
Yes.
I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Very interesting. There are some of your compatriots here. One is called Jackson Kalali Banda, like your name, last name, wrote on our Facebook, this is the woman of substance, a woman who rescued Malawi from collapse. May God bless her. Another one, Diana Chabuka, writes, Malawi will never be the same without you, Mama. You have Eric Chimariro, who is writing on Facebook, Malawi will always remember this woman. During her term, we had electricity, food, and our currency gained a lot. Is that true?
Yes, but I owe it to Malawians too. As I told you earlier, it's not me alone. It is the Malawians. When you engage them, they listen to you. One thing that I'm grateful for, Mr. Shaka, is that God gave me a good team. I had a good team of men and women. What I have discovered is that this is not going to be about women. So you can't just be women. In my country, yes, indeed, I made very, very critical appointments. The first Chief Justice Malawi was appointed by me. But I also had very strong men that worked with me and for me.
Very interesting. Yeah. Now you have, of course, Hassan Amin, who writes also via Facebook. Would you please ask her, when is she coming back to Malawi? The people miss her. She's got some stuff to explain to the nation, too. Please come home, President Banda. How do you react to that?
Yeah. That's home. And that's home I must go. What I felt is that, and this, you can go into other countries and find that it's the same. Sometimes when you change governments, especially when with the contentious elections, you need to create space for this leader to step in and settle down and work. Mm. In my particular case, I made a deliberate decision. And I did not leave at election. I left when there was that America summit by President Obama, the Obama summit.
Right.
I came here because I had the side meetings. 2014, yes. Side meetings that I came to attend during that event. And then went back home. And then left again when I decided that I was going to now, I thought to myself, what do I do? I need to continue with my development work. For your information, my activism and development work is 30 years old. My public office is 10 years old. So the 10 years that I went into minister, vice president, and president is, for me, a detour. So I decided to go back.
I see.
Yeah.
Talk to me about this issue of Kashgate. What is Kashgate, really?
I'm glad you asked that question. Kashgate, I come into office in 2012.
Yes.
And I had been hearing before then, as I told you, the relationship between me and the previous president. About money that was being stolen. Somebody was arrested having stolen $400 million.
So you inherited it, in fact.
So I inherited a situation where money was being looted.
Correct.
And it was because of the integrated financial management system that I was told later that had been exploited, was mm-hmm. weak. Mm-hmm. These are the system that was installed in 2005. Mm-hmm. So when I come in, out of the blues, I was talking to one of the ambassadors. His name is Alexander Baum. He was the European Union ambassador. Mm-hmm. To say, if you spot anything, if you get to hear anything, can you... And I was just talking the way I talked to everybody else. In fact, I could recall anybody, governor of this bank, and just brainstorm with them, bankers. Mm-hmm. And in this one event, he said, well, I thought you knew. It is the... Check the integrated financial management system.
Right.
It has been abused before, and it is possible that it could be abused again, but some of your predecessors didn't want to take action.
Time is not a best ally. Do you think that you went about it the right way, the best way you could have? Because there are a lot of people who apparently were very close to you in government and the party who may have, in fact, been beneficiaries of Kashgate.
Kashgate, so therefore... People that were stealing in this government continue with you in the last bit that I came in. So this is my last bit, and they are continuing. And I made an announcement to the nation on the 7th of September 2013 to say I have been alerted mm-hmm. that there may be looting. I've put together a team. We are investigating. A week later, the first group was arrested. And so a lot of people were arrested. When I heard that some people on my cabinet were being mentioned, I dissolved cabinet, to ask them to step aside
right.
in order for investigation to take place.
Correct.
That's what a leader must do. When you are alerted, you step, you put it there bare on the table, allow investigation to take place and arrest the people. And I arrested 72 people.
Last question. What about your plans? What are your immediate, medium and long-term plans?
Immediate plans is to finish this research I'm doing, mm-hmm. present my papers, publish it, and go back home. My future plans are for me to continue with my development work, what I am doing, fight for women's rights and women's leadership. But at the end of the day, if you're talking about my political life, mm-hmm. it is Malawians that will decide. If Malawians are saying what they're saying here and they want me to continue, they want me to stand again, I shall go back home and answer that call.
Then you're willing.
But if they are not interested for me to stand again, that's fine.
But if they ask you, you're willing to serve.
I'm willing to serve my people.
Servant leadership indeed.
Yes.
Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, President Joyce Banda, former Malawian head of state and currently serving as a distinguished fellow at the Center for Global Development and the Woodrow Wilson Center here in Washington, D.C. Thanks to affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Malawi. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.